Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for the Doctors Roundtable, a forum for conversations with Atlanta's leading doctors and thought leaders about cutting-edge trends and topics in health, wellness, and lifestyle issues. Here's our host, Tanya Mack.
Hello, everyone. This is Dolores Hartley filling in for Tanya Mack today, who's traveling. We're so glad to have you with us, and we're delighted to have Dr. Dorothy Mitchell-Leaf, a very prestigious expert here in the Atlanta area. And so just a brief introduction. Dr. Mitchell-Leaf is a native of New York, but she's been in the South for a long time. She joined Reproductive Biology Associates, which is the Southeast's largest infertility practice, in 1991. She's board certified in OBGYN, and she received her MD and completed her OBGYN residency at the University of Louisville, Kentucky. She then went on to specialize and completed her fellowship in reproductive endocrinology and infertility at the University of Louisville. She's past president of the Medical Association of Atlanta. She's won numerous awards, some of these being the 2010 Womanetics POW Award, the 2006 Atlanta Business Chronicles Healthcare Heroes Award, and the Medical Association's prestigious Harmon Cup Award, given periodically to individuals for their outstanding contributions to public health. She is, we're very excited to have her, and if she'd like to let her open up now, if she has anything else to add, because she's got great experience to share with us.
No, I'm looking forward to speaking with everyone today, Dolores, and look forward to answering all the questions.
Great. Thank you. Our topic today, the title is Advances in Female Infertility, Help, Hope, and What's Hot. And coming up April the 21st through the 27th is National Infertility Week here in the United States. As more women delay their childbearing years until after the age of 30, when natural fertility starts to fall off, fertility has become a growing issue in American culture. Technological advances in genetics, fertility techniques, and testing have provided new tools to help women know their personal fertility status earlier and make plans accordingly to help manage their fertility over time for the best possible outcomes. Listen now as our local Southeast and national fertility expert, whose practice has helped bring over 30,000 babies into the world in 30 years, shares critical information on the topic. So let's just get started, if you would, and talk a little bit about the incidence and prevalence of female infertility and how big an issue is this today.
Well, I think that it's very important to know that there are different factors that obviously create problems with infertility. Mainly in the woman, it's age. Unfortunately, the older you are, the more difficult it is to achieve a pregnancy, because you were born with as many eggs as you were ever going to have, and they decline over time, and by the time you're 40, there's definitely a decrease in the number of eggs you might have, and also the quality. On top of that, you have genetic issues such as increased risk of aneuploidy, things like Down syndrome, monosomies, which mean their chromosomes are missing, and those cause miscarriages and obviously infertility as well. So age probably is our biggest factor. Women over 35 to 40 definitely have an increase problems with achieving a pregnancy. There are other things such as the fact that, of course, men make up, I know we're here to talk about women, but the men make up 50.
You gotta have both.
You have to have both, and they make up 50% of the concern, and so we don't want to ever leave them out, and we always want to get them tested. And there's a significant amount of male infertility. It makes up sometimes 50% of the infertile couple's problem. Things such as tubal disease, endometriosis, fibroids, polycystic ovarian disease or not ovulating, all are major problems with infertility. Beside that, we deal with patients who have multiple miscarriages, and again, that goes along with either some uterine abnormality. It could be problems with genetics that I discussed before, and also clotting factors that we're finding are a major issue in not allowing patients to continue pregnancies that we're able to now test for and treat fairly easily.
Very good. Statistically, though, do we have any to share with anybody on that? I don't know if you brought any of that with you or just have anything off
the top
of your
head. Know that one in women over 35 to 38, the rate is about one in every four couples have infertility problems. So it's significant. It really drops off gets higher incrementally with age. And
above
that's the reason
35.
Why I brought that. So. And every problem doesn't necessarily give a percent. We know that there's a graph, the fecundability rate. When you're 21 to 28 years old, you have a pregnancy rate per month of about 25%. That's if you are everything else is normal. You have the husband has a normal sperm count, your tubes are open, your uterus is normal, you ovulate, and everything's fine. After 30, it starts dropping down to 37, and then it starts going down to about 10 to 15% per cycle.
Wow. So we're going from a 25% chance
down to 15. And then after 40, it's way down there in the 10 to 5% range.
So we want to see you before we get to those statistics,
We would much rather see them early.
Absolutely, yes. Absolutely. So I think you've talked about some of the predominant factors, and that was age for the women.
Yes.
But also some other health conditions. But what about weight and exercise? Anything there that you might want to speak to?
That's a big one. We do a lot of testing for patients, especially of polycystic ovarian disease, that sometimes is coupled with individuals with insulin resistance. That's not diabetes. It's not type 2 diabetes. It's where they do not metabolize their sugars properly. So they may have a problem with weight gain because of that. So we do test them. We have medications such as Glucophage, which is an oral medication. It helps along with diet, which is low carbs and low sugars. And it really assists those patients in achieving a pregnancy many times on their own if they get their weight down to the proper BMI.
Right.
So anything over a certain BMI around 32, we are truly having problems with people. They don't ovulate. What's happening is in their adipose tissue, they store estrogen. Estrogen pretty much turns off the entire ovulatory function. So that's the reason why it's so important to lose weight. Those ladies who exercise too much, we tell people who are trying to get pregnant, don't do more than 3 hours of rigorous exercise a week.
Okay.
You want to make sure you're at least 108 to 110 pounds because that's a critical weight around which women less than that definitely have more problems with ovulation. So there is a thing about exercise too much. It would be nice that those other people exercise more. but we do try and test the women, help them with their diet, and assist them in understanding the problems that have led to why they're not ovulating, and perhaps they could get pregnant without our assistance except for medications and dietary changes.
Wow, that's really good info right there for sure. Can you talk a little bit about the test that you use to determine what the problem might be? I know there's probably a variety of tests
yes.
that you use.
The standard is, the first is a hysterosalpingogram, which is a dye test to check the lady's uterus and tubes to make sure that their tubes are open, they don't have something called hydrosalpinx, which might have been caused by a previous infection, such as chlamydia, which people may never even know they had.
Yes.
They may have some abnormality in their uterus, such as a septate uterus, which is a wall down the middle of the uterus that causes implantation problems and miscarriages, or a bicornuate uterus. And many times patients might have a little bit more problem getting pregnant with that. They could have scar tissue after having had DNCs for miscarriages in the past.
Mm-hmm.
The other problems could also be fibroids, which can impinge or push into the uterine cavity and decrease the amount of implantation effect that embryos could have, and they may need to be removed. Polyps are big. The secondary test is called a sonohistogram. That's just saline infused into the uterine cavity under ultrasound guidance, and that allows us to see polyps. It outlines polyps, which are big because they also can cause implantation problems. So that's one of the big tests that we definitely make sure everyone gets. And, of course, the semen analysis on the male partner, all of the gentlemen should definitely get that. And as I tell them, there's no pain involved in getting the specimen. So we definitely want to get that. The other tests are getting an AMH level, and I know we're going to talk a little bit back again about that, right. But this is a test that can be done any day now in the cycle, anti-Müllerian hormone, and it can tell you a range of your levels of ovarian function and how many eggs you have. Not the exact number, but a relative number, so that if you have a very low number of less than 0.16, you're really running out of eggs or have already. The upper number is 4. And if you have a higher number than that, then you might have polycystic ovarian disease. And that's significant for us in our treatment protocols for what drugs might not you might not need so much of, and therefore you might not get hyperstimulation. The other tests are blood tests. We just get thyroid testing on everyone. We definitely want to make sure your prolactin's normal. So some various blood tests are very important as well. So we try and get just the basic tests. For those who might otherwise look good, we can get a progesterone level 7 days after they ovulate. For individuals who have pregnancy loss, they can get karyotypes or genetic testing on themselves, but then also do clotting studies that can, if they're abnormal, can cause a woman to miscarry or not even achieve a pregnancy in some cases. So those are very important as well.
Wow. So we've got a whole battery of things to look at when we're beginning the diagnosis and looking at the next optimum treatment for the patient is we're doing. So we'll go on into the treatments there. Mm-hmm. So what are the primary types of treatment available for female infertility?
Mainly those women who don't ovulate. If you don't ovulate every month, we've done all the testing, they might have polycystic ovaries. We might, for those who need to lose weight, we do that first and also gain weight, whichever one that is. But then we have clomiphene or letrozole, which are medications that are oral that you can take. We do some ultrasounds to make sure you're producing the eggs. And then we can do inseminations where we wash the sperm and put it directly up into the uterus, which improves the chances of achieving a pregnancy. And we're trying to consolidate it because we like to only do about 3 or 4 of those cycles mm-hmm. before we talk to the patient. If they fail, then we need to talk about other other testing or medication. For those patients who are running out of eggs or have the lower end of the spectrum, many times because they seem to come in at 38, 40, 42, we tend to say IVF is really the way to go. Gonadotropins are nice. Those are the next step up from clomiphene, but the problem is if the women are younger, have a lot of eggs, mm-hmm. then the difficulty is we can't control how many eggs get fertilized. And so when we do that, as I tell the patients, we don't want you to be Kate and Nate and have multiples. And we're really trying so hard not to have them have those multiple pregnancies. So that's when we have to cancel those individuals about doing IVF so that we can put just one embryo back because their statistics are extremely high. So we go through a spectrum depending on what the problem is. If they come in directly, and I'll come back to IVF in a minute, but if you have patients who have painful periods, that they say they've had painful periods as teenagers, it goes away when you take birth control pills, it comes back and they're having it again, they haven't gotten pregnant, we have to ask them to please consider the fact that we should do a laparoscopy to rule out endometriosis. And that has a major impact on problems with implantation, tubal motility, ovulation, or egg quality. So it's extremely important because many times patients will not really talk to their doctor about it enough, and they really need to be their own advocate in that particular situation. Get a laparoscopy, have the surgery if you, and make sure that's taken care of, because you might be able to achieve a pregnancy on your own if the disease is early on rather than later, such as stage 3 and 4 when it's damaged the ovaries. So that's very simple. If you had a polyp found at the time of your sonohistogram, you can have that removed with something called a hysteroscopy, which is an outpatient 30-minute procedure. If you have fibroids, that's another thought. We really like it if patients try to get that evaluated. You can get ultrasounds, talk to your OBGYN about it, and not wait too long. The bigger your fibroids, the harder the surgery, the more difficult to get your uterus back to its normal state, and you might have an increased risk of blood loss. So we ask people not to wait forever to get that the fibroids removed, because it's extremely important to get them done at a smaller size rather than where you're almost 4 to 5 months pregnant. That complicates their outcomes. So that's another big issue we have.
She's given some great advice here and teaching me as well, because the timing seems to be a critical factor here.
Yes.
And not waiting until it's worse. Take it when it's better.
Right, right.
But that's probably the first conversation I've heard someone say about birth control. Pain, birth control go away, pain recur.
Right.
So
right.
That's a really significant point to remember, too.
And also, if you have premenstrual spotting, that's very important. Those are just because a lot of times we see patients who have endometriosis have polyps, fibroids, and endometriosis. It seems to be a triad. Not everybody has them, but we see a lot of it. So it's very important to make sure when they have their laparoscopy, they also probably need to have a hysteroscopy if they didn't have a sonohistogram.
Great. Excuse me. I'm going to go on in, and you may want to talk to IVF, or shall we talk a little bit about this new hormone testing first?
Well, let me talk about the AMH, because it does tell us what to do, actually.
Okay.
And again, I said something about it already. Anti-Müllerian hormone is the test that allows us to help women know how many eggs they may still have in a relative sense. And again, the numbers are less than 0.16 is low. That means you don't have many eggs, if any, up to 4. And that's a relative normal scale. If you have a higher number, you might have polycystic ovarian disease. So we used to do an FSH-LH estradiol on day 3, which was very hard because the patient had to come in. She had to make sure she got it done that day. Now you can do it any day. You can even do it with birth control pills.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So that for younger women whose mothers might have had early ovarian failure, which the mother should share with her daughters, then it's important for ladies to come in, get it done with their OBGYN or internist, whatever, just to have an idea of where they stand. And we are seeing so many young women, even in their 20s, who have very low levels. And the reason why this is so important is for women who are finishing an education, doing extensive training, or perhaps aren't married yet and not quite ready to have children. If they get AMH levels, we can actually freeze their eggs for the future. And so we're very pleased to have been able in our practice to been doing this since 2007.
Wow.
And so for women who do have this issue, it's not as though they now have to just hope and pray, as they tell me they didn't meet Mr. Right yet, that we can do the egg freezing very early. And that way they have that insurance policy for the future, that they can have their eggs and still get pregnant later on, even maybe 5 to 10 years from now. So we do that even for cancer patients who have going to have chemotherapy. We do it right before their chemotherapy and are able to freeze their eggs for the future for them too. So this all is hooked together. The AMH tells us, for women who are older, this is where we stand. We really need to move quickly. We need to do IVF so that we can gather as many eggs, make as many embryos as possible, so that you have a better chance than just producing one egg per month and then running out of time on top of it because your eggs are going down. So this all tells us that it's important time-wise where the woman stands and what therapy might be best for them. If they have a very large number of eggs, we like to do IVF too, because if I make too many eggs, then they're going to have multiples. And in those patients, we can give them very low doses of medication, still do IVF, and we're freezing part of their eggs and only fertilizing a certain percentage of the other eggs. So they don't have a lot of embryos in the bank. They feel much better about it, but they have that extra option of having eggs in the bank for another time if they needed it. So this has really helped a lot of women who perhaps had polycystic ovaries, didn't respond on clomiphene, gonadotropins gave them multiples, but now we have a better option for them, and they don't feel like they have to make so many embryos that they worry about to use up in the future. So I think this has been very positive, being able to use the egg freezing backup in that. But that's how we use this AMH, beside hoping everybody gets it so that they know where they stand and they aren't in tears in our office when we have to tell them at the age of 32 that it's
you don't
not,
have any
not
eggs.
Looking good.
Yeah.
And so it's very readily available. They probably could even go to an any lab test and get it done, and then definitely talk to their OBGYN to get it done if they're getting a screening or getting their annual pap smear. So I think that's important.
So genetically, we're talking about advances here, because since only 2007, we've been freezing eggs. Is that what
yes.
I understand?
In our practice, for sure.
Okay.
We've been doing that very successfully since 2007, yes.
And again, the test that Dr. Mitchell Leaf is talking about is called
Mullerian
hormone, or AMH testing.
Correct.
So we can get that at our OBGYN offices as well as with Reproductive Biology Associates. And what's the cost? And is everybody going to be knowledgeable enough to really read this with you? And we're just looking at levels or?
Well, we explain. I mean, and now the OBGYNs are getting very knowledgeable about it. They understand the situation and they're able to counsel their patients. So that's been great. But they could get it in internist office
okay.
as well. But, you know, if they wanted to talk through OBGYN, that's why I was thinking they could get it done. It's around $80.
Okay. It's cost-effective.
And that's cheaper than doing the three tests in a row that costs a lot more. So I think it's telling us a lot more how to counsel our patients, which I think is really important.
That's great.
And those patients who don't have or have a very low AMH, and maybe we give them a stimulation cycle and then don't make eggs, then that tells us that we need to counsel about egg donation. Egg donation in our practice, we have an egg bank. It's probably the largest in the country, where we have egg donors that are 21 to 28 years old. They're extremely well screened. They go through the IVF process. We freeze their eggs. We put their picture on, the baby picture on our website. They have also information about them, and our patients can actually get all their testing done and then go online and pick a donor. Our pregnancy rate is now 66% with one embryo, which is marvelous, because
wow.
they don't have to worry, especially the older women, don't have to worry about having multiples. And because if you put two in, you have a 40% chance of twins. So we really counsel the patients about putting just one in. So the pregnancy rate is very good and able to just be able to do one embryo.
And that's with egg donation.
That's with
needed.
Egg donation, yes.
Yeah. Wow, you're just telling us all sorts of stuff here that I wasn't even aware of. So have we talked, we're looking at women can preserve their fertility, and basically we've talked about egg freezing and storage.
Yes.
And then some parameters that at some time egg donation. Is there anything else on preserving fertility that would be a topic, or we've covered it?
I think you covered that.
Okay.
I think the only other thing was the general IVF. I had some.
Okay. Things. Well, let's go back to that then.
Okay.
That's everybody has heard IVF,
yes,
and we're
yes.
very familiar with that term.
Yes. And I have to say, Dr. Edwards unfortunately died today, and he was with Steptoe and Edwards, and they initiated IVF back in 1978. So
wow.
I saw that today in the news.
Oh, my.
Yes. So it's been around a very long time.
1978.
It has definitely changed the dynamic of, I didn't get to read it, but it's around 4 million babies have been, probably 6 million babies have been born since then. through IVF. So I think we have to give a tribute to Dr. Edwards and Steptoe over that.
Well, thank you for sharing that with us.
So IVF has come a long way. We have perfected our ability to not hyperstimulate our patient again with AMH levels. We have very directed drugs that decrease, you know, the amount of hyperstimulation, which used to, again, be a problem. Our egg quality is much better as far as being able to, we can see the mature eggs as soon as they're collected. The fertilization, such as ICSI, intracytoplasmic sperm injections used for the male factor. I personally had the first ICSI baby in the United States in 1993, and they've been doing it ever since. So we've been doing this now for 20 years.
Tell us a little bit more about ICSI.
It's intracytoplasmic sperm injection. It's one sperm placed directly in the egg, and we use it on a daily basis. Okay. But it started to be used for those men who had extremely low sperm, and they were not able to get into the egg, penetrate the egg, so we just helped them get in.
There.
But it's been perfected over time, and it's extremely valuable, especially because women's eggs are thicker the older they get. So even if the gentlemen have excellent sperm, it's better to take the one sperm and place it into the egg rather than not getting a fertilization of that egg. So we definitely have another, that's where the other male factor comes in, and right. Anybody who needs that, we definitely go straight to IVF because of that. But the age factor, if you have polycystic ovaries, if you've failed all the other things we've done, IVF is an answer because you might have unexplained infertility. The other thing we do is do IVF for genetic problems with miscarriages.
Okay.
For those patients perhaps who have had multiple miscarriages, they don't have clotting factors, they don't have anything else, then it's more likely that it's genetics. Women's eggs over the age of 35 do not divide properly. It's called aneuploidy, where some of the chromosomes will stay in the egg, giving you the extra chromosomes, such as Down syndrome, trisomy 21, 13, 18, or monosomy, where you have missing chromosomes that go off to the polar body, so you're rendered an embryo that is not going to function or continue. So those patients who might have miscarriages, even though they're very young, may find that a very large number of their embryos are actually abnormal. We are now able to do something called complete genetic hybridization, where you take an embryo that's about, it's on day five, they have about 100 to 150 cells per embryo. You can take a few cells out, freeze the embryo, send this off to different labs that now do the complete genetic hybridization for all 23 chromosomes. We'll know the answer in 2 weeks, and we'll be able to just replace the embryos that are going to be normal. And this, most of the time, we're finding that there are multiple problems. It's not just the one anymore. They will have 3 or 4 abnormalities in just one embryo. So it's something that we're learning that's new for us, too, because we used to just see what we got on our biopsies from miscarriages. Well, those are only the ones that made it.
Right.
And then, or usually the trisomy 21 and 18, 13, but now we're seeing all kinds of abnormalities, and it makes sense why these patients haven't been able to achieve a pregnancy, but the CGH embryos are doing much better and able to help them achieve a pregnancy. We also use that same thing for women who are over the age of 35 to at least 38 to 40, because they have an increased risk that, yes, they might have embryos, but they are not going to have many normal. I give the example, I had a lady who was 41, and she had about 12 embryos. We CGH'd them, and only 2 were normal. I have another lady who's 43. She had 15 embryos, and only 3 are normal.
Oh, wow.
So we know now that that's very specific. We could have gone through 3 or 4 embryo transfers and never known the answer, or even achieve the pregnancy until the very last time. So I think it's informing us of why things aren't happening, how we can help the patient better understand why the testing is important and give them an option if they wish to do it.
Right.
I mean, everybody, we just give everybody options. We just want to educate them about what's available, and they can choose whatever they wish to do.
And that's all related back to genetic testing.
Genetics.
Which is so important.
Yes.
So, anything else on the IVF? There's so much to know.
I think that we've done very well in growing the embryos to day five, the blastocyst stage. It helps us allow those embryos to keep growing. They change the fluids and all the media every day or every 2 days, so that if you start out with 10 embryos and maybe on day three we used to put them back, we wouldn't know which ones were the best.
Okay.
And so now that we're growing them to day five, a lot of the other ones just fall out.
I see.
And so now that allows us to put the very best ones back in and freeze those. They freeze better. Our thaw rates are extremely high, probably in the 98% range, so that we feel comfortable with freezing those embryos, not putting so many embryos back anymore, and being able to at least select out or have them select themselves out which ones to choose to transfer.
Wow. Have you got an outstanding success story that you might like to share? Just some, I know you've probably got 30,000 babies out there, so I'm just wondering if there's something really special that the audience would like to hear about.
Well, I saw a lady yesterday. She brought her friend in, actually. She had five losses. She never got pregnant five tries. And we had done everything we possibly could. And so they said, we want to try one more time. I said, okay. And they said, is there anything else you can do? And this is outside the box thinking, and just, you know, we don't do this very much. But I said, well, sometimes we don't know if the tests that we've done are all complete, or maybe there's something else going on that wouldn't work for you. So do you want me to just give you what we call empiric heparin and prednisone, just steroid, just to make sure that maybe there's something else that's destroying the embryos? And we don't do this very often, but this is her sixth try.
Mm-hmm.
And she now has twin girls that are 3 years old.
Oh, my
yes.
gosh.
And that's why she brought her friend. And I said, you know, I can't promise everything here, but we'll try. But those are the kind of things that, you know, we just have so many special patients. And,
I'm sure
and
you do.
We try everything we can. And I'm sure there's so many stories. The only reason I'm just thinking about that is she was there
just
yesterday
there.
Bringing her friend in.
Yeah.
And I think that I know that every single one of the physicians probably throughout the country, all we have so many complicated individuals. We're trying very hard to be as best we can to get them babies because we know this is so important.
Yes.
This is emotional. They ride a big emotional roller coaster. We ride it with them. We have our days where everybody got pregnant, and some days we don't do so well, and we don't always have the answer, but we keep striving to find why. But there are patients we don't always do that. And I think the one thing, I've done this 32 years now, that in the old days we could not offer egg donation. We have to tell ladies, you don't have any more eggs and I'm sorry, you'll have to adopt. And now we're at least able to offer them egg donation and be able to have complete their family. Many times they might have had another child, their own child, and now they'd like to have one for their child. And so I think that it's been special to be able to give everybody a lot more options and to be able to give more answers than we didn't have in the past. We just have to say, I'm sorry, I don't know. We're just very comprehensive in as much testing as we possibly can and try to not miss anything. So I think it's been very rewarding. It's humbling because sometimes we can't find everything, but I think the fact that we can know that we can try to do as many tests as possible and get some answers that'll get them babies, I think that's been very special.
I'm sure it is. It has to be. That story gave me goosebumps just listening to you tell it. So that's wonderful. So I want to go back to your practice just a little bit, because y'all offer so much, and you've talked a little bit about it, but during the process about your healthy spirit, healthy body, your support groups, educational opportunities, how all that evolves into the picture of helping these families.
Well, I think that we try to offer everyone as many opportunities of learning. We like to let everyone know the options and treatments and opportunities that might be helpful to them. So we try to be as comprehensive as possible. We give lectures. I know I'm giving one tomorrow that's free to the public, so that we can bring people in actually do AMH levels. So that we can reach out to the community and along with our own patients and try to make sure they understand all they can about infertility and treatment. So we try to make it very comprehensive. And we have psychologists for individuals who might wish to have treatments, or maybe just come to a communal talk that we have in the office. So there are just so many things we do, and we're very happy about going on our website. We have a website that has a lot of information.
Yes.
We try and update it as much as possible so everyone knows maybe the newest thing they need to be thinking about. So, and I know we change so much, and things have changed, and so we're always trying to, you know, if I saw a lady yesterday, hadn't seen me in 10 years, and I'm like, wow. There's a lot of things for me to tell you, except that unfortunately she got older, but there are so many options. And just even patients in a 3-year period, it's very nice to say, well, we're doing X, Y, and Z that's new, and I can offer you another, you know, possibility of achieving a pregnancy maybe that I didn't have in the past. I saw a cancer patient, and we're hoping we're getting AMH levels on her that I never was able to do before. So I think that those are very important you know, pieces of our practice
absolutely
try and be as comprehensive as possible.
And advances just continue ongoing.
Yeah.
So a
we
lot
keep
to
trying.
Know. Absolutely. What about research through your practice? What kind of research are y'all directly involved in?
Mostly in the lab.
Okay.
I know Dr. Naj, who is our embryologist, uh-huh. They do a very large number of studies. He goes around the country, obviously, also helping other labs and understanding maybe something that might be helpful to them. But most of our studies in the in vitro lab.
Okay. Well, here we are in Atlanta, Georgia, with one of the premier practices and the premier reproductive infertility specialists, and she's just given us so much great food for thought and information to the public. So any other last tips for women frustrated by trying unsuccessfully to conceive? Some practical things you might tell them, other than coming to see you?
Well, I think they just need to be their own advocates. Talk to your doctors, ask for testing, ask for as much of the things that we talked about today. Do those testing, see what's going on, and don't wait. I think too many patients just hope everything's going to happen. And unfortunately, that doesn't always
time
occur.
Is not always on our side.
And time in our particular kind of practice, time and age and situations, it's so important. I'd rather have people come in and go see their OBGYN or anybody else, get the test done and know where you stand, and then go from there. But don't hope and pray and wish that everything's going to happen. And we all would love everyone to get pregnant, just sit and talk to me and they'll go home and get pregnant. That doesn't happen. Some, it does. It does. But it's so much better to be informed, know what's
Absolutely.
Going on with you. It's just like if you were worried about a certain age, check your heart, check your, you know, glucose levels.
Your
Are you
cholesterol.
Diabetic? Get your cholesterol checked. It's the same thing, but this takes two individuals, and we have to make sure everybody gets tested, everything's done completely, and then you can go forward and make decisions about your care. And a lot of times, being younger and doing it earlier is a lot less expensive and time-consuming than waiting till the last minute and then us having to tell you either you don't have any eggs, we'll have to give you this other option for egg donation. or you know, you've got extensive fibroids or endometriosis, and it's going to cause you to do more extensive work. So earlier is better overall. Get tested if you can. Find out. Please get your AMH levels, because that's really important. I don't care how old you are. I think it's really important, and all those grandmother wannabes want to know what their daughter's AMH levels are. So I think it's just be your own advocate. Look for answers, seek them out, and, you know, get the test done, and just know, rather than wasting time and wishing and being sad when you talk to us that they should have done it earlier. Right. That's all.
Wow.
And we just want everybody to have a baby.
If you want a baby, yeah. If
you know, that's all. That's what we go to work for every day, trying to get people the children they want. And yeah. We just got to have them meet us halfway here and just
do what they
tests.
Need to do. Yes. Yep. Absolutely.
Yes.
So let's close now and let everybody know how to reach you. How will they find you?
Call Stephanie. It's Reproductive Biology Associates. We have our websites, rba-online.com. Our office number is 404-257-1900. That's a general number. And that'll all be, we have lots of doctors there. We have a great practice. And we have different satellite offices. We have one in Gwinnett. We have one up in Cumming. And we're going to have one in Marietta probably in the fall.
Good.
So, and plus our office on Johnson's Ferry. So we try to get to places so that people can get their blood work and labs done and they don't have to travel down here to Buckhead all the time. So I think that's been very positive and helpful for all the patients.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. We want to thank our sponsor, HealthGate. Thank your listeners and invite them to go to www.healthgate.com to learn more about HealthGate and today's talk. And there'll be links to this information. So again, thank you, Dr. Mitchell Leaf, and thanks everyone for listening.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
The Doctor's Roundtable has been a production brought to you by HealthGate and Business Radio X. HealthGate is a groundbreaking website where board-certified doctors and specialists offer savings on out-of-pocket healthcare costs. For more information about HealthGate, please visit www.healthgate.com or call 404-692-5377. We hope you tune in next week, and thank you for listening.